As she spoke, I noticed rather a nice house in the late Georgian style. It had a small garden in front, and we found it had a much larger one behind. HJL. Oh, that's the astral form of some house which has just been pulled down. It won't remain long. The astrals of inanimate objects don't last long unless someone takes possession of them and so links them with his personality. Let us go inside. C.W. It's completely furnished, said Carrie as we entered. H.J.L. So it is. That's rather peculiar here, though on the spiritual plane where the forms come it's the rule rather than the exception. I think it must have been burnt down and everything destroyed. Yes. I'm sure it was, for see, some of the pictures are missing. Look at the blanks on the wall. Why, there is even the cord, too, hanging to the nails from which they hung. Someone evidently slashed through the cords with a knife and carried out a few of the best pictures. They didn't save much, though. As he spoke, the boss sat down in an easy chair by the fireplace in a room which had evidently been the dining room. A very comfortable house, he commented, plain. Perhaps, but substantial. If I was still in the astral body, I'd take possession of it. Carrie. Let's go into the garden. So she and I passed out through a door in the dining room down a short flight of steps into the garden. A few moments after, the boss appeared in the doorway, carrying on his shoulder a small leather-covered trunk. On reaching us, he placed it on the ground, raised the lid, and drew out a book. There, Carrie. Fancy finding that here. C.W. Why, it's your old book, How to Make a House Healthy and Comfortable. H.J.L. Yes. I thought the house seemed very well brought up to date. Its owner was evidently a sensible man. I.J.W. was mildly amused at the obvious pleasure H.J.L. felt on discovering that the owner of the house had appreciated his book. But at that moment Carrie broke in, as we re-entered the room, I'm feeling rather tired, so I will be off to bed. I looked in surprise at H.J.L., who, however, appeared to take no notice of my inquiring look, but said, well, goodbye, then, for the present. Come again soon. I am always glad to see you, you know, and will take care to be here when you do come. Carrie then went out of the room, and as soon as she was out of sight, I noticed that the astral wall completely shut out astral figures. He said, you were surprised that she said she was tired. What she really felt was the call of her physical to her astral body, but that was the easiest way for her to explain it. To most astrals still living on Earth, the change back from the astral to physical conditions seems like falling asleep. Now it is time you two were returning. See how the crowds who were hurrying outwards are now going back. We looked out of the front door, and, sure enough, the dreamers seemed all to be moving back towards the direction from which they had come. Faster and faster they hurried by, and among them my father again repassed me with a disappointed look upon his face. He had not found the one he was seeking. Fewer and fewer they grew, and I noticed the so-called dead bidding farewells. Often with bitter tears, to those they loved, gone west, and who were returning to the waking world. Still fewer and fewer grew the dreamers, and in proportion as they grew fewer, the number of real denizens of the astral plane increased. Not all were pleasant to look at, and H.J.L. again spoke, it is time for you to return, and I seem to fall asleep. J.W. Note. C.W. remembered a considerable part of this meeting, but not all, and thought it was a dream. Gone West, Chapter 35, The Influence of the War Cloud, Transvision, July 27, 1914. On reaching the college in which H.J.L. lived, I asked him, Boss, do you think this storm cloud which has arisen in Europe will lead to war? Things begin to look rather black. H.J.L., I am afraid it will. Of course I am not closely in touch with the earth plane, but here men are saying that the astral plane is in a state of absolute chaos. All the evil spirits are crowding up there and are doing their best to precipitate war. Here we are beyond all that turmoil, but we are filled with strange forebodings. The next few days will, I think, decide it, but I have never made any pretensions to prophetic powers. Our work is drawing rapidly to its close, and it is well, for if there is war, our little band of workers will certainly be dispersed. They will have different work to do. You are not well yourself. I can see, unless you are better by next week, it would be as well for you not to make any attempt to come here till you are all right again. When in sound health, these excursions into the unknown can do you no harm, but when ill, you need all your vitality to fight the disease. In any case, you will not be able to do any automatic writing during the month you are lecturing at Cambridge. I do not propose that you should have an interview with the officer tonight. In the first place, you are not well enough to stand a lengthy stay here, and, secondly, the officer is in a very excited condition owing to the war cloud. He longs to be able to rejoin his old regiment, but several spirits have taken him in hand and are trying to calm him. We don't want all our good work flung away, and in that way he can do no good. There is a field of activity open to him, which we shall point out in due course. Just now, however, he's like a tiger that has scented blood, and it is largely his extraordinary behavior, coupled with what appears to be happening on the astral plane, that makes me fear for the worst. Now, goodbye. Take care of yourself and get well as soon as you can. The book must be finished off before you leave for Burma. So I returned to the earth plane, and noticed how tired I was as I re-entered my body. J. W. Note. I went up to Cambridge on the 3rd, and all through August suffered from a sharp attack of pleurisy. During the whole of that time I had no visions, nor did I attempt automatic writing. It was not till the 5th of September that I was able to resume automatic writing at Mr. K.S. house. Gone West, Chapter 36, The War, Letter from H. J. L. September 5th, 1914. We must get on with the work as quickly as we can. The time lost owing to your illness is to be regretted, but it has at any rate enabled some little order to be restored in the astral plane. But the latter is still in a most chaotic state, and its reaction is beginning to be felt even in our plane. Of course, the majority of the men who are passing over are young men, and go first to the astral plane. Huge crowds of spirits are pouring over, most of them still convulsed with hate, nearly all having died a violent death, and you can easily imagine the condition there. Many indeed do not even realize that they are dead, but ascribe their changed condition to some wound which has temporarily clouded their brain. The chief way, however, in which it affects the spirit plane is that a great call has gone forth for more enlightened spirits to come to the aid of the newcomers, and already countless hosts are pouring down to help. At present most of the helpers come from the two higher divisions of the spirit plane, but it is certain that some will go from our division also. As yet I am hardly fitted for such work, but when the call comes for me I shall answer it. 8, though I cannot pretend that I am looking forward to the turmoil of the astral plane after the peace and quiet I have enjoyed here. But enough of this subject, we must push on with the book, which I trust you will make every effort to get published, not immediately, of course, that is impossible. But presently, as the opportunity occurs, and we look to you, Mr. K., to write a preface 9. Explaining the circumstances under which these revelations were made. The officer will now take control. H. J. L. 8. The call came early in May 1916, when I went to him in the spirit plane, and told him my brother, R. L. Wards, had been killed in action. At once he went down to help him, and has been with him off and on ever since. 9. Mr. K. agreed to do this, gone west. Chapter 37, The Band of Spirit Friends is Dispersed. Conclusion, Vision of H. J. L. September 14, 1914, on arriving at the college in which H. J. L. lived, I found him seated there alone, save for the dog, Molly, who scrambled out from under the sofa to greet me. H. J. L. began to speak. The work is now completed for the time being. Our little band of workers is scattered, and I alone remain amid the old surroundings. Soon you, too, will be undergoing new experiences in the East, which will tend to widen your outlook. You need have no anxiety as to the journey. You will arrive in Burma safely. Though for some time I shall not give you any communications of real interest, yet I shall expect you each Monday as usual. The door to this world having once been opened, we must take care that it does not close again. For after a while I shall hope to start a new series of revelations, though their exact nature is yet unknown to me. Go carefully through what you have. You will have time to arrange the various contributions each under their proper headings, and thus you will have a fairly complete and continuous account of life over here. Hell, the astral plane, the realms of half-belief, of real but narrow belief, and of belief shown forth in a life of good deeds, have all been revealed. Beyond these planes I as yet know nothing, but I do not despair of gaining some knowledge of life in the fifth plane. So henceforth consider me, as I know you will, not as sleeping an age-long sleep to be broken ultimately by the trumpets of judgment day, but as a man still much like yourself, but freed at last of the trammels of a body, no longer subject to pain, no longer needing material food or sleep, and therefore as one freed from the drudgery of life, dwelling among pleasant surroundings, with boundless opportunities, not for idle sloth and endless psalm singing, but to study all subjects in which I am interested and the means to pursue those studies far further than any man can do on earth. Consider me able and anxious to help others, and by so doing preparing myself to climb higher and higher from division to division, making new friends and learning new truths day by day as time seems to you. Consider me happy and contented in a measure, glad to have escaped from the material world, but do not think of me as absolutely happy yet. Perfect happiness is a long way off still, and can only be attained by steady effort concentrated by a set and determined will after many ages, during all of which the spirit is undergoing fresh experiences, and learning new truths. Think of me thus, at all times, busy alike with work and recreation. The work is that which will help me to climb upward step by step, the recreation that which on earth I considered as work. So bear my greetings to all who will receive them and come to me regularly week by week, and now goodbye for the present, thanking Mr. K, Mrs. K, and all who have assisted me in this work. J. W. Before I go, tell me what J. B. P. and the officer and A. are doing. H. J. L. The officer is shortly, after a little more training, to go down to the astral plane to help the thousands who are being hurled into the new life they will find there, and badly they will need all the help they can get, cut off thus in the prime of life. But help they will receive. J. B. P. has already gone down again into hell. A. is still struggling to learn the simple lessons of the school where I was so long ago. J. W. Yes, to you it must seem a long, and yet as earth reckons time it is only 9 months since you passed over. Gone west, H. J. L. Yes, but time here counts by experience and not by hours, if indeed one can call it time. And even on earth I think by the time December 31st has arrived not only you, but the whole world, will say, this is the longest year we have ever known, but now goodbye once again. And so we parted. And to and fro since then I have journeyed, and always had a ready welcome, but little of special interest, merely family news and such small talk, though all the time I know J. H. L. was working at various profound subjects. But at length the fatal day came when I sought his aid on behalf of my brother, and that aid was given ungrudgingly. And now my weekly visits are devoted in the main to the astral plane, of which before long I hope to write a fuller account. Gone West, Part 2, The Officer, Automatic Writing in Trance State by J. W. Witnessed by Mr. K. Chapter 1, The First Letter from the Officer. His passing over, for an account of his life on earth, ch. J. L., 24th of January 1914, p. 14, February 17th, 1914. I will start by stating a few facts which you must grasp so as to realize what life is like here in hell. Spirits over here fall into the following groups. 1. Spirits of dead men or animals. 2. Spirits who have never been incarnated. 3. Spirits who come from other planes, etc. Of these, the discarnate spirits may be divided as follows: dash. 1. Elementals, good, bad, or both good and bad. 2. Vices personified. 3. Evil spirits created by the thoughts of men, for example the devils of our childhood days. Now the elementals are the most numerous, especially on the astral plane, and most of those that are there are bad. The other non-carnate beings are met within the higher spheres, and the mixed ones often take an active interest in world affairs. Some are the guardian spirits who watch over great nations, others over societies, and so forth. This explains the fact that England as a nation has a distinct personality, quite distinct from that of any or all the separate individuals who form it. Now I hope these first remarks will enable you to get some idea of the type of beings other than men we meet here. They are not much in evidence in the set of half-belief, but the higher types, of whom I, as yet, alas, know little, reappear in the higher sets. They include some of the angels and teachers, but many of these were men who, having learned, returned to teach. You cannot easily divide and classify the various spirits. I will now start an account of my death. I was walking along the Strand when a beastly motor bus knocked me down and ran over me. I should have seen it, only I admit I had been having rather a number of glasses of whiskey and was not quite myself. Now the funny part is this: after the accident I got up, felt a little shaken, and, seeing a crowd gathering, decided to hurry on to the office where I was to sign the agreement for that patent. When I reached the door of the office I knocked, but to my surprise my hand seemed to go through. No one answered, so I tried to push open the door, and, next moment I found I had gone clean through. My word! I said, I'm more drunk than I thought. Wonder if I had better go on. However, seeing a flight of stairs, I went up them and knocked at the office door. Same result. Went through it. I found the man waiting at his desk and a clerk at a side table. I took off my hat and bowed, but the ill-mannered swab took no notice. I said, I've come to sign that agreement. But again he did not answer, and next moment, turning to his clerk, said, gone west, if that damn fool doesn't come in 10 minutes I shall go off to that other appointment. I'm here, you fool. I shouted, but he took no notice, and in spite of everything I could do he at length got up and, after cursing me roundly for not coming, went out. I swore and cursed too, so at length I went out, saying to myself, he's more drunk than I am. Again I seemed to slip through the door, but as I did so I heard a fiendish chuckle, and, turning round, saw old Billy, a former pal of mine. Why, Billy, I said, thought you were dead. So I am, he replied, and so are you at last, old sport. You're dead at last. I thought we were never going to get you. You damned liar, I'm not dead, I'm quite alive, only rather drunk. Drunk? Squealed Billy. Even when drunk you can't walk through doors, and aren't invisible. Why didn't that fellow see you if you were only drunk? Then suddenly I knew it was true, and immediately I wanted to go in search of my body. We had reached the street, and at that minute Billy saw a nice-looking girl. See that girl? He shouted to me. Yes, I replied, but you need not yell so. You fool, she can't hear us. I'm going after her. What's the use? I asked. She's not that sort. Gone West, Chapter 2, First Experiences on the Astral Plane. The Drinking Den, Second Letter from the Officer. He took me away I know not where, but it was into an awful darkness. Soon I was aware of a vast crowd of other spirits. Where am I? I cried to my guide. Where would you like to be? He asked. Whatever place you wish to go to you shall. I want a drink, I cried. Come along, he replied. We have one here who looks after all who thirst. In a moment I was aware of a howling mob, and over them presided a being. How shall I describe him? He most closely resembled a drunken man, low, bestial, sodden with drink, foul in every way. There was nothing grand or majestic about him, nothing of what Milton describes of ruined splendor. The nearest thing you can ever have seen is some drink-sodden wretch thrown out of a pub at closing time. He leered, and we all yelled, "Drink! Give us drink! Come with me," he seemed to say, "but you will have to work first." In a moment we were in a large, low-drinking den, somewhere, I should think, in the East End of London. It was crowded with low men and women and even children. Oh, what a lovely smell of gin and whiskey there was. It is true there was rather too much loaded cheap beer, still, one can't be too particular. But when I wanted to get hold of a glass of beer which was standing on the bar, I was quite unable to hold it. The desire for it grew stronger and stronger, and I seemed to contort myself with a kind of mad fury. I looked at the drink guide, and he was laughing and jeering and mocking me. At last he said, "Work, you lazy brute, how can I? Look what the others are doing." Then I noticed that many of the others were twining themselves round the men and women who were drinking. I cannot exactly describe how they did it, but they seemed to be insinuating themselves into their carcasses. Suddenly I saw a man who was already fairly tipsy drop in a kind of drunken stupor. At once a spirit who had been twining round began to fade into him and soon seemed to be absorbed into him. He was gone, and lo! The man staggered to his feet and yelled, "More beer, you dash! I won't say what." The barmaid gave him some more, but I could see that it was not the drunk man but my spirit companion who was, as it were, shining out of his eyes. He drank and drank and got more and more violent, till at length the chucker out seized him by the shoulder. He at once seized a quart pot and felled the man. The blow was terrific and split the fellow's skull. Then there was pandemonium. Many of the drinkers rushed out shouting murder. With them in some cases went the spirits who had twined themselves round them. But others seemed to cast them off. I noticed for the first time that these spirits were divisible into two groups, those who were obviously men and those who were not. The latter had various forms, all more or less bestial. I cannot describe them. They were foul, misshapen things, not human or animal, sometimes composite, with animal heads and human bodies, some heads only, some foul monstrosities with no shape or form, things one might see in D.T., but nowhere else. Gone west. Meanwhile the drunkard who had felled the chucker out stood waving his beer pot. Then I heard a fierce, wild yell of laughter, and saw our guide laughing and cheering. We all began to cheer too. Why, I don't know. Then the companion who had taken possession of the drunkard, began to disentangle himself from him as it were. He was out, and lo! The man collapsed in a heap. "He's dead, I suppose," I said to a friend. It was old Billy. "Oh no, only drunk, but he'll swing for it, I expect, so we shall soon have another to join our merry throng." But it was not really he that did it. Of course not, but who's going to tell the jury that? They'll learn he's had a grudge against the chucker out and has several times sworn to do him in. Are you going to witness to the truth? He laughed, and so did the others. Just then a policeman entered, and soon a dozen people were busy explaining what had happened. Several more men in blue entered and picked up the drunken man and carried him out. "Well done," said the Grand Master of the Ceremonies, as Billy facetiously called him. "Well, now, you others, go and do likewise." The drinking started again, and after a time I found in some way I could get a sort of satisfaction by twining round a man. It was not exactly drinking, being more akin to the satisfaction one used to get from smelling alcoholic spirits. But it was grand and yet unsatisfactory, a sort of dead sea fruit. So we hung round that pub for many a day, and I learned even to take possession. I can't and won't describe how we got possession, but it's something similar to the way in which I am now able to write. You need not fear. I don't wish to do these things now, and if I did, there is a great guardian spirit who stands by you, not to mention your own father-in-law. Now I must give you a rest, as Mr. Rell has arranged. Besides, I have told you enough about the drinking den, so rest for half an hour, and we will go one stop further in the next letter. This ends letter 2 by me. The Officer. _ Gone West, Chapter 3, The Denizens of the Astral Plane, Still Controlled by the Officer, Spoken. Now I think I had better explain who the drink guide is. He is not an elemental, nor is he the figure conjured up by the thoughts of men. He is created by the lust of all who desire drink, that is to excess. If all the world were to cease to desire strong drink tomorrow, he would gradually fade away. Not at once, because we over here would be able to sustain him for a little, but as we should no longer be able to gratify, even in the shadowy way I have described, our lust for drink, in time he would fade away for want of sustenance. So, too, with all the lusts we know of, the old idea of the seven deadly sins was not so far out, but there are a jolly sight more than seven. The demons created by the imagination of men fade as the men who have created them, by thinking of them move on, but, unfortunately, they are always being recreated by other men. Some persons do quite a lot towards peopling hell with devils, while there they torment, as we have been taught to believe they would. Those who have not been taught about them don't see them. The elementals are quite different. They exist of themselves as much as we do. How they originally came into existence I do not know, but you must not suppose they are all bad just because I speak of them as such here. There are blithe, light-hearted spirits who haunt dells and woodland glades, the fairies of our childhood. Innocent children do still occasionally see them. But, as they are laughed at for their pains, they cease to believe in them, and so lose the power. There are many types of elementals, spirits who inhabit the winds, and so forth. I shall for the present deal mainly with the evil ones. But even among them, as among men, there are degrees of wickedness. I believe, too, they are capable of progress, but exactly how I cannot say for certain. Sometimes a dead man continues to take an interest in his family and tries to watch over it. Sometimes he is able to give it premonitions and warnings. But often death warnings are given by elementals who come scenting death. These come hoping to be able to draw some physical substance from the dying person. This naturally leads one to the subject of vampirism, which is fortunately rare, though it does occur, not, however, in the crude form usually related in legend. This, now, has given a glimpse, a rather horrible one, of some of the beings whom we meet here. Thanks awfully for your kindness. I will give you more information next time. If it revolts your gentle soul, Mrs. K., forgive me, but I have to give it. So goodbye, and thank you. The officer, H. J. L., took control. Thanks for your kindness, Mr. and Mrs. K., but I consider that what the officer can tell is perhaps almost the most valuable part of all this work. H. J. L. Gone West. Chapter 4. An incident in the life of the officer upon earth, a vision seen in a bottle of water by J. W. at Mr. K.S. at 7:40 on February 10, 1914. From notes taken down by Mr. K. I see clouds of smoke, a spot of light, large flashes of light, a blaze of it absorbing the whole bottle. Grass, miles of it. Burnt up grass, yellow and dry. Great mountains piled high one above the other into the far distance, and some of them crowned with snow. We are in a valley between steep mountains, with a stream running down it. Three men come riding up it dressed in khaki soldiers. They are riding up a steep path on one side of the valley. The flash of a gun, a man drops, another flash and the horse of the second man drops. The rider of the wounded horse gets up and seizes the bridle of the horse of the wounded man. The third man, who is unwounded, turns and rides for his life, leaving the other two behind. The unwounded man, who remains, leans down, and, picking up the injured man, places him on the horse which he has captured, and jumps up behind him. Heavy firing all the time, heads appear, some with turbans. One of them hurls a great rock down the side of the hill. The soldier urges his horse forward full gallop, and the rock passes behind him. Another rock rushes past just in front of the horse. More rocks come crashing down, but miss the fugitives. Firing continues. The path goes under the side of an overhanging rock which shelters them, for the boulders leap clean over them and fall crashing into the valley below. They are out of range now. Reach the valley in safety. Here the unwounded man meets the one who ran and hurls his revolver full in his face. The coward falls from his horse stunned, The man who rescued the wounded man is very clearly visible. He is about 40 years old, a sallow face much lined, a mustache and dark hair.